You are listening to the Archaeology Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the CRM Archaeology Podcast, episode 68 for September 16th, 2015. I'm your host, Chris Webster. On today's show, I sit down with Patricia Martz and Sylvia Valentin, the President and Vice President of the California Cultural Resources Protection Alliance in Pat's home in Irvine, California. We talk about what the CCRPA is, what they do for cultural resources, and what you can do to get involved. So do your part and go tell someone about the archaeology you're doing, because the CRM Archaeology Podcast starts right now. Okay, welcome to the show, everyone. I don't have any co-hosts today, but I do have some in-house guests, and usually we do all our interviews over Skype, so it's nice to be face-to-face with somebody and not at a conference, not at a noisy conference. I think this is the first interview I've done in someone's house for the podcast in over 2.5 years.
You are truly in-house.
I'm truly in-house, yeah, exactly. So I've got Sylvair Valentin and Patricia Martz of the California Cultural Resources Preservation Alliance, the CCRPA, www.ccrpa.com, and we'll have that link in the show notes for anybody that wants to go check out the website, and any other links we mention on the show, anything else that we can, we'll put in the show notes for the website so people can find that.
Facebook.
Well, and this show is linked through Facebook as well. Okay. So Facebook, Twitter, it's on LinkedIn, it's all over the place. So, but on the webpage, www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/CRM Arc Podcast/68, which is a mouthful, rewind that and write it down again, you'll find the show notes for this podcast. So, all right, so let's get into this. First, I'm going to have Patricia and then Sylvair introduce themselves and give a little bit of their backgrounds, and then we'll talk about what the CCRPA is and what you guys do here in California. So, Patricia, why don't you go ahead and start?
Okay, I'm Patricia Martz, and I'm Professor Emerita of Anthropology and Archaeology at Cal State Los Angeles. And prior to that, I was a senior archaeologist for the Army Corps of Engineers. Prior to that, I was an archaeologist for the Archaeological Research Unit as a grad student, and did a lot of CRM work and also volunteer. In those days, we learned archaeology by volunteering first. And while I was a professor at Cal State Los Angeles, I was appointed by Governor Duke Majan and then Governor Wilson for the to serve as prehistoric archaeologist on the State Historical Resources Commission. And I served there for 6 years. It was a very interesting experience and an educational one.
Mm-hmm. How long did you teach at Cal State Los Angeles?
20 years.
20 years, wow, nice, okay.
And so I'm very young.
Absolutely. And Sylvair, your background?
I'm an archaeologist doing CRM in California. I was one of Pat Mart's students. Mm-hmm. She taught me archaeology. That's how I've been.
That's how come he's so good.
I know.
After I was done with school, I did a lot of CRM projects, surveys and excavation projects. And I worked as field techs, crew chief, and later on I became cultural resource specialist for some big CRM firms, and I also worked at Camp Pendleton Marine Corps as a cultural resource specialist, as a federal contractor, not as a GS employee, but that was for 1 year almost.
Okay, so we're going to be talking about the, like I said at the beginning, the California Cultural Resources Preservation Alliance. Pat, why don't you tell us what is that? What do you do?
Well, we're like a grassroots organization, although we are since 2004 a 501c3 nonprofit.
Okay.
But the reason that we got established was there was a huge site, 9,000-year-old site, in Newport Beach, Back Bay. And it was supposed to be in open space, but a developer got in there and wanted to build a gated community. And the destruction of that site led a lot of people to be very concerned, mm-hmm. Native Americans and archaeologists. So I asked around, and we got together with some of the Wanaino people in Orange County, because they're mainly the most active Native Americans in Orange County. And so what it is an alliance of archaeologists, Native Americans, historians, cultural resource people, managers, and just the interested public, people that are interested in preserving archaeological sites. Mm-hmm. And this site that started the whole thing off, the city didn't let people know that there was an important village site there, because they were using the non-disclosure act as an excuse. And so they got the citizens to vote for this project to go in. The CRM firm excavated 100 one-by-one units and missed 600 burials.
Wow.
Which were then found by the bulldozer.
Wow.
And so this was one of the 9,000-year-old site with huge blades that were came from Oregon, mm-hmm. Fire clay figurines, stone balls, I mean, all kinds of very interesting things. And the report was an executive summary this big. And the archaeological materials, I read the research design, and it said that both recorded and non-recorded artifacts were going to be done. So in other words, they weren't going to sort everything, okay. Sorted and unsorted. And so the unsorted materials were put in boxes and sent to the warehouse in Santa Ana, mm-hmm. and put in metal containers where it got so hot, all the labels popped off. So wow. There was no provenience.
Right.
And so it was just, a real bad deal. So we decided that to pick the 10 most important sites in Orange County and try to monitor them and protect them. And we've been working ever since with going to hearings, writing letters, mm-hmm. Trying to convince developers and property owners to put archaeological sites in open space or even under a parking lot, but just to preserve them rather than digging them up and having some CRM firm write a boilerplate report. Right. And the public doesn't know anything about that site.
Hmm. So. Was that in Darby Stapp's Avoiding Archaeological Disasters, that book?
I don't know if that made it.
It sounds familiar.
It might have been, yeah.
Sounds like it should be in the second version if it's not.
It was just, a traumatic experience, but that's what got us started. Mm-hmm.
What year was that?
That was, I think, 1978, I think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so we got started in 1978, and one of the things that we did do that was amazing was worked with the Irvine Company to preserve the Tomato Springs sites. And so mm-hmm. 100 acres of that site is going to be preserved. And we have a memorandum of understanding with them about preservation of that site. So housing is going in all around it. Mm-hmm. And they're also going to build a community center that's going to have a whole room for interpretation of the Native American artifacts and things.
Okay.
So that was one of our victories. We've lost a lot of projects that we were trying to preserve. And the thing that we're so concerned about is this mitigation. Mm-hmm. That going right to data recovery mitigation. And not only is that a disservice to the archaeology of the future, because it's archaeology as it's done today is very destructive.
Right.
And I think in 50 years, we're going to have remote sensing that's so good. We can go over a site in a hovercraft and interpret everything we see and then surgically excavate what we need to ground-proof things.
For sure.
And if there's nothing left in 50 or 100 years, so that's a disservice to archaeology. And things are dug up like cemeteries. Mm-hmm. Prehistoric cemeteries are excavated. And then they dig a big pit somewhere and dump all the bones in there and reburial. And a Native American gets paid to do the ceremony, and the archaeologists get paid for digging it up.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want them preserved in place,
yeah,
and not reburied somewhere with, you know, grave goods all thrown in. And so it's a disservice to archaeology, but also it's a disservice to the public, and it's a terrible disservice to the Native Americans, because data recovery doesn't do anything for them.
Mm-hmm.
Their values, and you know, there's been a revival of Native Americans learning their language, and this is all they have left of their ancestors and their history, and data recovery is just destroying that. It's not helping it. So we're trying to convince developers and property owners to put sites in open space and preserve them.
Well, that's good to think about. I was talking to some colleagues of mine not too long ago about that, how, you know, archaeology is about learning about the past, and data recovery is not necessarily archaeology. Data recovery is a tool, and sometimes it's necessary and sometimes it's not.
Right.
You know, I mean, if they're going to dig up a whole thing anyway, then you may as well do some data recovery on it. But if they're not going to, and they can say cap it or cover it and save it for the future, yeah, that's a good point. So,
and I think CRM companies can still make their money, mm-hmm, because you've got to test a site. You have to determine the boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
And usually they upfront data recovery anyways. You know, they test it
right
to the point where they don't need to do much when it's a data recovery phase.
Right.
So they wouldn't lose out that much, but they could still preserve things for the future. And the Native Americans are very concerned about losing all these sites. 90% of the coastal sites in Orange County have been destroyed.
Wow.
So, you know, there's not that many left that
right
for the future and for Native Americans. There's a site, there's a park, Fairview Park, and it's a conservation park, supposed to be to preserve plants and animals. And there's a huge archaeological site that is listed on the National Register of Historic Places. It's ORA 58.
Mm-hmm.
And cogstones have been found there and all kinds of interesting things during WPA archaeology and burials. Well, the city council, Costa Mesa City Council, wants to make it a sports park. And so we're fighting that along with the residents around there who want to leave it natural so they can go out with their kids and look at the birds and the plants and things. And there's even vernal pools there. And so that's one of the projects we're working real hard on to try to save from being a sports park.
So you keep saying we're in reference to the CCRPA, but who is that? I mean, it's not just you two, right?
Oh, no.
So like who is that right now? Like, what does that mean?
You mean the people that are... Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like how many people, let's say, what do you call your, like, members? Or do you become a member of this?
Yeah,
or do you become... Yeah,
we
so...
Have, well, we have a board.
Okay.
And on our board, we have Rebecca Robles, who's a Juaneño, and Alfred Cruz Jr. And Rebecca's on the board because her mother, Lillian Robles,
mm-hmm,
was one of the... Native Americans who saved the Pavunga site at Cal State Long Beach from a strip mall. Oh. She put a tent there and wouldn't let them, mm-hmm, wouldn't let them bulldoze. And then later they were sued, and so now they protect it. And she started the Ancestor Walk, which is very interesting. What happens is they start at near Camp Pendleton at the site known as Panhe, they don't really walk. We drive to the next. And then we go to San Juan Capistrano, where the founding village of the Juaneño was destroyed for a Catholic high school.
Wow.
And then we go to the site in Newport Beach, Back Bay, that was where there's now a gated community.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a ceremony and throw tobacco where they think the burials are. And
We stand in front of the gate
because
we can't get into the community because it's gated.
Wow.
So you can't really go to the village where the village site was standing. You can only stay behind the closed gate.
Yeah.
Interesting.
And also same in San Juan Capistrano, they can't go where the burials are. They did cap it,
mm-hmm,
and put the sports field over, but a lot of the buildings destroyed a lot of the site.
Right.
And then they go to Seal Beach, where a cemetery was capped and preserved, and then to Cal State Long Beach, where they have a big potluck, and they have the bear dancers come and dance. And mm-hmm. so Lillian was on our board, and she passed away, and then her daughter came on.
Okay.
And we have real estate lawyer who's a history buff, and we have a real estate person who's just interested in trying to preserve sites, and a couple other Native Americans, so it's, and several archaeologists. We just work together. Some people go to a hearing here, and some go to a hearing there and write mm-hmm. letters. And
okay. Are you based, do you operate all over California then?
Well,
or mostly around here?
We were naive when we started calling it the California Culture Resource Preservation Alliance. We rarely get out of Orange County because
so
Orange County is almost built out.
Yeah.
And so there's still some sites here that we're trying to
okay.
protect. But I do get emails from Chumash people
mm-hmm.
asking for help with preserving a site in Santa Barbara or Ventura, so
okay.
I give them advice and help them with that.
So if somebody called you from elsewhere in California,
yeah.
you would talk to them and say...
yeah, try to help them,
yeah.
write letters. And we've gotten help too. One of the big problems is getting sites listed on the National Register of Historic Places,
mm-hmm.
because with a built property, you know, a house or a historic house or something, there's incentives.
Yeah.
But for archaeological sites, there's no incentives, and the SHPO and the keeper of the register make it real difficult.
Really?
It's really hard to get a site listed.
Okay.
And if someone ought to do a study, I think, to my knowledge, there's only 4 or 5 sites in Orange County that are listed on the National Register.
Mm.
And 2 of those are only listed as eligible because the property owners object.
Okay.
So that's one of the things we do too, is nominate sites for the National Register. And it's a lot of work. They've revised the rules, and you have to have special kind of photographs and the boundaries. And
yeah.
It used to be a lot simpler.
Yeah, it was
right?
a lot simpler. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's very difficult to get a site listed.
Wow. So, Silvera, how'd you get involved, and what do you do to help out?
Well, I got involved, obviously, because I know Pat, because, well, she was my professor, and next we became friends. Initially, I wasn't, when I graduated with my master's from Cal State LA, I wasn't involved in CRPA. I started CRM, started doing surveys,
mm-hmm.
and I did realize that resources were being mitigated relatively fast,
yeah.
especially on big projects. I mean, I know when we work in CRM, archaeological sites are resources, and it just becomes like a product. Like, okay, you go, you record it, you look at it, you're like, okay, well, doesn't look too important. Okay, mitigation. Well, you'll just put one test unit here, see
mm-hmm.
what it is, write a little report, and the next day, okay, bring the bulldozer. That's just great. That thing. I don't recall, until now, I don't recall having worked on any project where the mitigation measure was, let's cap the site,
mm-hmm.
let's protect it. It's only now on my current project that I finally have a case where the client is saying, we want that archaeological site protected.
Yep.
First time ever in over 10 years of doing CRM.
Do you think that's a big experienced developer, and they've dealt with this before, and that's why they're saying that?
I think it has to do with the B-52, the changes.
Oh, Assembly Bill 52
yeah.
now says under CEQA that sites that are tribal cultural resources
mm-hmm.
have to be considered instead of just the, is it a unique site? Is it a significant archaeological site?
Right.
And they identify tribal cultural resources, it's a landscape or
right,
even an object, and those you can't mitigate
no.
digging them up, because it's a tribal cultural resource, and they're not interested in the scientific information. They're interested in their ancestors and having a place where they can go and commemorate them and visit the site. So
my favorite example, I think, of that is Mount Shasta.
Yeah.
Isn't that an entire tribal cultural property?
Right.
Really?
Yeah.
A traditional cultural property?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Can't mitigate Mount Shasta.
The client is a nonprofit organization, and rather than a developer for profit to build a lot of houses and things.
Yeah.
So I think they were more amenable, and I think that a lot of credit should go to Silverin, to his boss, who talked to them,
yeah.
Which is really, if more CRM archaeologists would, they don't even approach and suggest preservation of anything.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, to be fair, they don't get called in early enough either, to in the planning process where avoidance is a feasible option.
Yeah.
By the time the archaeologists get involved, they may have already had the biologists out there and everybody else, and archaeologists the last one to come out.
Right.
But if you get it early enough in the planning project, it would be feasible to avoid and preserve things.
I'm always thinking about, that's why I started my own CRM firm, but I'm always thinking about sort of out of the box style thinking. And I was just thinking when you were saying that, I'm always trying to think, okay, because I mean, really, if you do cap the site and you don't do $1 million worth of excavation, I mean, the CRM firm is out all that money on excavation, right? And that's probably sort of the motivation a lot of these people would say, let's just go excavate it because that's job security. We have a payroll to make. But my thinking is, think about it a little differently. Don't think about it as your only avenue for money. Go to the client and say, listen, it will cost $500,000 or whatever to excavate this site. Or we can save you all that money. We can cap the site. It'll cost $50,000 or whatever it's going to cost to do that. But then you give us another $50,000 to write a book about this, to publish about this, to go to conferences over a certain amount
and
of time.
And make you look good.
And make you look good, make the site look good, and inform the public about this, and still save you $500,000 because we didn't excavate it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think CRM firms just think like that. And a lot of the publishing that we do, I know people just end up doing it on their own time, for a lot of this stuff.
Yeah.
So make the client pay for it and save them money at the same time.
And I also think like with site capping, there's a lot that goes into it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people don't really know what site capping really entails, and it's a pretty complicated process. Any CRM firms that invest in specializing doing site capping can, in fact, probably make quite a bit of money even just doing that.
Yeah.
And next you still have to monitor that site through time,
mm-hmm.
Added to that, as we well know, archaeology is not a renewable resource. We're not biologists where we can save a few frogs, put them together and repopulate an area with those frogs.
Right.
We can't take flakes, put them together and be like, hey, rock shelter, come here. It's not going to happen. I can't ask Native Americans to be like, hey, go back out there and make a rock shelter for me, okay? No, that's just not possible.
Right.
So whatever we excavate, whatever we mitigate, it's gone, period.
Well, they could go out and make a rock shelter, but we'd have to wait another 50 years to record
exactly.
it, right?
So, ideally, I mean, we should start, in CRM, we should definitely start putting a little bit more of an emphasis on preservation as
mm-hmm.
being the best practice for mitigation. Because right now, the best practice of mitigation is testing, excavating,
mm-hmm.
And just writing off the site.
Well, then the other problem is something we were talking about yesterday is if the land or something like that has a certain lease time to it, and then when that time ends, who's going to know that there was a site underneath there?
Right.
It's almost like we need those call before you dig signs for archaeology.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Somebody to call, SHPO or somebody.
It should be on the deed.
Yeah.
People shopping for where to build a supermarket,
mm-hmm.
they'll pick a piece of land that has a huge cemetery and they don't even know. Because there's no way that they can know about that. So it should be on the deeds too.
Right.
And then, there's the curation problem.
Right.
It's very hard to get a curation facility that meets federal requirements to take anything anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're full, and the CRM firms, they're not getting paid to do research per se.
Right.
And so, we'll curate them and somebody will do research on them later. Well,
later never happens.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of good reasons for why we need to change the way we're doing things now before it's too late, before everything's gone.
And yeah, I know Chris and I, we were talking yesterday about the fact that more and more museums are full. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you get a collection, you want to get it created somewhere, and it's so much time and effort needs to be invested in even finding a place that is willing to take your artifacts and your collection and create them. Another thing that I want to backtrack with is, as far as like California and most of the states anyway, that you think of historical buildings, there's a financial incentive to keep an historic building in its original state, mm-hmm. you know, and preserving them. You get a tax write-off sometimes or some sort of reduction in the property taxes, depending where which city you live in. Mm-hmm. When it comes to archaeology, nothing for archaeological sites. So right now, like I see a lot of parcels of land that are in very influential areas that are extremely expensive. There's nothing for those landowners to push them to preserve those sites. There's nothing for them to really save money or anything like that to preserve those sites. Mm-hmm. If there was something in the Californian legislation that say, hey, you know what, landowner, if you kept that site, you'll be exempt of paying property taxes for the next 10 years, 20 years.
Right.
Well, if there was such a thing, suddenly you would probably see a lot of important archaeological sites preserved. But that's not the case. Why? Well, that's something that probably, you know, would need to be changed.
You know, reference to that, Pat, you've been working in this area for, I mean, quite literally since the beginning. I mean, you mentioned the NHPA getting passed. You don't think like, oh, that's pretty much kicked it all off for CRM, right? I mean, why do you think there's still that attitude 40 plus years later, almost 50 years later, towards archaeology? I mean, is it because it's underground and it's buried versus like a historic building that's just in your face and obvious? Yeah. Is it the problem? Is it the archaeologist's fault, really?
Well, for not? I think, you know, if we had adobe structures and things, it'd be easier to preserve. But even some of those, you know, if you hear some of the horror stories of things happening in New Mexico and Arizona, with the graves and things being a project going in and somehow ignoring it. But yeah, it's really important for the archaeologists. You're standing on a vacant lot and you've got the property owners and there's nothing to, and you're saying, this is really an important site. Yeah. You've got to really spin a story and tell them why it's important. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, they'll hopefully get it. That Tomato Springs site, I went out there with the developer and some of the other archaeologists on CCRPA, and we're standing there and you could see Catalina. There was a view of Catalina from there, and I thought, there's no way they're not going to build $1 million houses here with this view. And but we walked around the site and explained how important it was, and I guess we hit them at the right time, so they agreed to preserve it.
Wow.
100 acres. So.
Jeez, that's nice.
Yeah, but I thought, oh, we're doomed. Look, you could see Catalina.
Yeah, but again, how long is it preserved for? Because the way these things change hands.
Well, that's
that
site in San Juan Capistrano. That's the founding village of the Huaneño people. Mm-hmm. There's Boscana, Father Boscana, who was the priest at San Juan Capistrano. He wrote down the oral traditions and. The chief Owaiso, who was somewhere out in Corona, there weren't enough seeds for his people. Mm. So he took his daughter and a group of people and came and found that beautiful San Juan Capistrano Valley and established a village there and left her as the chief.
Yeah.
And they called it Pitiedom. It means outer navel because she had an outer navel. And she was called Coroni. And so after that, all chiefs, women chiefs, were called Coroni. And I did all the work to get it listed on the National Register of Historic Places, and Silver did a lot of the more technical stuff, graphics and things. And the State Historic Preservation Office approved it, and the State Historical Resource Commission, and Adrian Praxalis is on that.
Yeah.
And they told us how wonderful it was, that we did a really good job. They forwarded it to the keeper, and the staff there said that we couldn't have it listed under A or for association with important events, the founding of the village, or B for a big person, because how many prehistoric sites do you know the name of someone?
Right.
And they won't let us do it because they're saying if they came back, they wouldn't recognize the site because of the sports field on top of it and the buildings.
Wow.
But they're letting us do it. They may let us do it under D. We're still waiting. I submitted this in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And it recently is being looked at again in 2015.
Wow.
And they're still sitting on it at the keeper's office. And they might let us do D. But what a slap to the Native Americans. They, you know, that's really an important site to them. And what my concern is, this site is capped under the ball fields, the football fields and soccer fields. But what happens in 50 years when their lease runs out and they're going to, maybe a big box store will go in? They won't know. They'll dig them up. They'll dig the burials up again.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm trying to get it listed so at least there would be some record of it. Yeah.
I see it as, it's a little different having a ball field on it, but I see it as like when I was in the South and Southeast United States, like Civil War battlefields that are on the register. I mean, you look at it, it's just like rolling hills.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing there. It's buried.
Yeah.
Or there was the event that took place there. And there are probably like musket balls and things like that if you go out there with a metal detector. But those get listed fairly regularly.
Yeah, but a
prehistoric
site is the founding village.
Right. If anything should be listed, it sounds like that.
Yeah.
If it sounded like if that doesn't get listed, it's like, what else can?
Yeah.
The mission is listed.
Oh, yeah, of course.
Obviously.
Yeah, because you can see it. Yeah.
It's really very discouraging.
So how does somebody get involved if they want to get involved with the CCRPA?
Oh, we would love to have more help.
So how do they get involved? Who would they contact, and what does that mean to get involved?
They can email me at p.martz@cox.net.
Okay.
We'll and have also that in the show notes. They can go on our webpage and our Facebook.
And we have a Facebook page for CCRPA Facebook.
Okay.
We there. So, in fact, I think the Facebook page has been pretty instrumental in getting
more people involved
because it gives us more. It makes us more visible to also other tribes throughout California and even other archaeologists and.
And our webpage is sort of a work in progress.
The webpage, webpage right now is looks like it's from the 1990s. we'll get it updated one day.
A lot of archaeology webpages look.
I'd love to have supporters and members, people on our board. Silver is the vice president now.
Okay.
I'm the president, he's the vice president. And we have... it's important to have the Native Americans on on the board as well. So we have three.
Okay.
All right. And how do you guys get funding for what you do? I mean, I assume your positions are not paid.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
We don't have...
But you must need funding for something occasionally.
It's mostly donations.
Really?
And...
Okay.
Sometimes we participate in Earth Day, and they had a raffle, and we got half of the raffle proceeds. And it's just small stuff. Yeah. We want to do more fundraising. We did write a grant with Caltrans, but we didn't get it.
Okay.
We'd like to, try to get more funding so we can do a lot more.
For sure.
Because in some cases, like Fairview Park, where we are against the city of Costa Mesa, who's very invested to have that park built as a with a soccer field and baseball field and all the other stuff they want to build on this on this property. Sometimes we've been going to those hearings for over 2 years. And yeah, they listen to us, but they don't really change their point of view, because then they invested in having that property, that park built upon. And at the end of the day, you know, I'm not going to be surprised if it's not going to end up in court. And obviously, you have to spend money to get lawyers.
Right.
And that's where, like, unfortunately, funding comes into play.
Well, and when we were trying to get the Petitum site listed on the National Register, we had to fly to Sacramento, you know, a couple of times. And
yeah.
So, and it, of course, brought the Native American contingent, you know, to show up and
right.
speak in behalf of that site. So,
that's up fast.
Mm-hmm.
So, we, you know, we want to pay their their airfare and lodging and everything. And so it takes our budget doing that.
Okay.
And also there's things that we can send them to. You know, there's different conferences and things that would be really good to be able to send some of the Native American CCRPA members to.
Mm-hmm.
And we would like to put on some CRM or laws and regs and CEQA stuff for Native American groups. So, because they really don't understand, you know, they get tons of letters saying, do you care about this site? Respond, you have 30 days. And they don't, you know, they don't know what, how to work with that. And because they don't understand how CEQA works. And it would be good to, you know, bring people in and have workshops. And we did one at Cal State Long Beach, and we did a workshop on CEQA for the Native Americans.
Okay.
But yeah, we need funding.
yeah, sounds like it. Can people, if somebody listening to this wanted to donate, is there information on that on the website?
On Facebook, is there?
Yeah, well, we created a PayPal account for donations, but I still need to have the link.
Where
set
is it on
Facebook. Right now, it's in nowhere.
So coming soon.
Coming soon.
We'll
accept donation.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right now, I'm sure if they emailed you, Pat, they would.
You
would gladly take their money.
Really, and it would go for a good cause. But we need more people too.
Yeah.
So anybody, you know, all they need to do is care about preserving archaeological sites and about Native Americans.
And what, I don't think we've like absolutely addressed it. If somebody came to you, they're just a, I don't know, let's say they're a field technician working for some random company, and they say, I want to do something.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what would they do?
Help us write letters.
Okay.
Help the Native Americans write letters.
Mm-hmm.
And go to hearings.
Okay.
Participate in some of our outreach. We do some educational things, and they can help with that. We need people who can write and get letters to the editor and, you know, things like that. So,
you guys have tables at some of the bigger conferences too, usually?
Yeah.
Yeah, probably need people to sit at those tables too.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
Tell people about it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And we had a table at Fairview Park because the Friends of Fairview Park put on a big thing for people to come to, and so we had a table there, and Native Americans played flutes and did things like that. So the Native Americans are gaining more power, and so I tell them, you know, as an archaeologist, I can't really do much for preservation, because you, as an archaeologist, you can mitigate it, you know, but Native Americans can say, hey, you need to preserve this, because that's not helping our, you know, our values. So, so I think they're gaining more power, especially with that AB 52. So we're trying to get more of them to participate, because they were so repressed through time. They don't think that they can have any power, or that anyone's going to listen to them. So,
or that even anybody really cares.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of them think that, hey, you know, they really think that they are the only individuals that really care about their own heritage. But, you know, as archaeologists, we went in archaeology because we like the history. We like, obviously, the Native American culture, because that's what we're looking at and recording most of the time.
You didn't get into it for the money?
No. We took a vow of poverty.
Yeah, exactly. Pretty much.
Yes. It's called a BA in anthropology, right?
Yeah.
No. So is there anything, before I get to that, do you know of any other groups like this in other states, in the United States?
I don't. There must be, right. I wish there were more.
Yeah.
I've given information to some Chumash people who wanted to form a similar group, and I don't know if they ever did, but I gave them the blanks of how to be a nonprofit and some of the, our mission statements on the back of our card, and you know how to develop a nonprofit. So.
Okay.
Well, that's good. It almost sounds like since you took the best name for this organization for the whole state of California, it almost seems like you have chapters across California. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So, okay. Well, is there anything that you guys really want to mention about this, or something about you're doing that we didn't talk about yet?
We have a lot of different sites that we're trying to preserve. That Camp Pendleton wants to do training on Panhe, which is a village and cemetery that Rebecca Robles' ancestors are buried in.
And,
and
a direct ancestor, based on the archive from the mission, her ancestors are literally buried there. So it's really her ancestors, like direct line.
Yeah.
And they want to do track vehicles under Trestles, which is a big surfing beach, and come up on Panhe and the San Mateo Archaeological District. And they're saying, well, we're only going to go down 50 centimeters.
Mm-hmm.
But every year, they go down 50 centimeters. And they're saying, because it's plowed. Well, plowed sites in California still have important information.
Sure.
So there's a number of projects that we're working on to try to preserve.
I haven't heard you mention this, so I'll ask you back, because I just thought about it. Have you guys worked in your history with any historic sites and preserving historic sites as well?
We recorded the San Juan Capistrano Hot Springs.
Okay.
So as a volunteer, we went out, volunteers and students.
Mm-hmm.
And so we went out and cleared the vegetation and recorded all the hot springs, the different soaking areas, because the rangers wanted to remove all the historic foundations and the historic things around them, and so we recorded it so that they could and form a management plan and preserve the historic structures and foundations there.
Okay.
Well, I think we'll have some links on the website on the show notes page for this, www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/CRMARC podcast/68, or just click on the link that's probably in your podcast player right now or on the website, and you'll go to these show notes. So check out their website, check out the Facebook page, and we'll have Pat's email in the show notes as well. And get involved, and we did a profiles episode with Pat that's also on the website at /profiles. And that's one place where we mentioned, and this is a way you can help do this, but that's one place where we mentioned, half of your job is doing archaeology, whatever that means to you, quote unquote, doing archaeology, and the other half is telling people about it. And I think that's part of the preservation efforts here is also
right.
Information, and just getting information out there to the public.
Yeah, so. And people who want to help us, we could use talented people who are creative that could help us educate the public and educate planners. And
right.
So and that would be really good. They could put on whatever kind of interpretive information. So we're looking for people like that.
Maybe whatever part of California you live in or call home, you can, in the name of the CCRPA, you could go and put out an outreach event.
Outreach is really important because most people think the Indians are extinct.
Right.
There's no Indians here, and there's no in archaeology. There's nothing here.
Yeah.
So it's really important, and we have to do more to get the public knowing things. And if there's a really important site, they should have videos of it. There should be non-technical reports with lots of pictures. There needs to be information out there. No wonder the public doesn't care.
Right.
They're not getting anything. And that was the whole reason for data recovery, was to provide inspiration and benefit for the public. And they're not getting any.
Yeah.
And, anything from these sites.
Right. Okay. Well, on that note, I think we'll call it for this week. And thanks, Pat. Thanks, Silver. And like I said, check out the resources in the show notes.
That's it for another episode of the CRM Archaeology Podcast. Links to some of the items mentioned on the show are in the show notes for this podcast, which can be found at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com/CRM Arc Podcast. If you like the show and want to comment, please do. You can leave comments about this or any other episode on the website or on the iTunes page for the episode. You can also email me at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com or use the contact form on the podcast webpage. If you'd like us to answer a question on a future episode, email us. Use the contact form on the website or tweet your questions with the hashtag CRMArcPodcast, or you can tag @ArcPodNet in your tweet. Please share the link to the show wherever you saw it. If you share CRM archaeology-related items on Twitter or Facebook or anywhere else for that matter, be sure to use the hashtag CRMARC so the community can see and comment. If you'd like to subscribe to this podcast, you can do so on iTunes or on Stitcher Radio. You can also type the name of the podcast into your favorite podcasting app and subscribe that way. Don't forget to go over to iTunes and leave a review of the show. It helps us get noticed so more people can find our podcast and benefit from the content. Also, send us show suggestions and interview suggestions. We want this to be a resource for field technicians everywhere, and we want to know what you want to know about. Also, please consider donating to the Archaeology Podcast Network. Your donations help fund our bandwidth and contribute to our editing costs.
This has been a presentation of the Archaeology Podcast Network. Visit us on the web for show notes and other podcasts at www.archaeologypodcastnetwork.com. Contact us at chris@archaeologypodcastnetwork.com.
Thanks again for listening to this episode and for supporting the Archaeology Podcast Network. If you want these shows to keep going, consider becoming a member for just $7.99 US a month. That's cheaper than a venti quad eggnog latte. Go to arcpodnet.com/members for more info.